Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the don't nearly view system deal. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Thanks for downloading another episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast. Apologies, it's a day late. Hopefully that hasn't disrupted your week too much. To be honest, I thought there might have been a bit of news out of the Welsh Rugby Union by now, but as it stands, Wayne Pivac is still the coach, although the speculation is that he is likely to move on and Warren Gatland is said to be named a coach in the short term anyway. So we'll see how that story unfolds, a story that was broken by good friend of the pod, regular guest, Steph Thomas, broken in the Times yesterday. So always exciting. And we had Gatland on recently as well. We got our finger on the pulse for once. I say that as I'm recording it a day late. Hopefully you'll enjoy it. Me and the mighty Murph. Murph's had 1 week off, and in that time we've lost to Georgia and also thrown away a 21-point lead to Australia. So, yeah, lots for us to get our teeth stuck into. And unfortunately, a sad note to start the pod on as well, with the death of Doddy Weir, much loved Scottish rugby player. And yeah, you'll all know who Doddy is, but one of those players I think you had just an amazing relationship with, fans from all nationalities really, but I think particularly in Wales. You know, the Doddy Weir Cup is contested between Wales and Scotland, and I think a lot of those trophies are often quite pointless, but it was quite poignant the fact that it's named after Doddy, and he was able to see the first kind of five of them be played out. So a much loved figure from within the world of rugby. So really, really sad news to start on, which puts all of the rest of the stuff into context. But anyway, we hope you enjoy this episode of the pod, and we'll be back to talk rugby with you soon. If you want to subscribe, so if we ever are late, then you can make sure you get notified. So if you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pods, then you shouldn't miss out. Right, on with the show.
Redpath goes in, Doddy Weir smashes further, Weir has scored! Doddy Weir is the man who's over, his fourth try for Scotland, and the two old Melrose colleagues were in it.
And this really, if we can assume that Scotland are winning this game, has been a game fashioned by the forwards, and nobody more prevalent than Doddy Weir has worked tirelessly all day.
Welcome to the Attacking Scrum podcast. This is going to be an interesting one, Murph, isn't it? We've had you off. You only took 1 week off, and what's happened since? Wales have lost to Georgia.
It's been quiet since I've been off.
Wales have lost to Georgia, and then that was followed a week later by what you've just described as the most depressing 48 hours in sport.
Welsh sport.
Yeah, we won't touch on the football. But Wales then blow a 21-point lead against a second/third string Australia side. I want to get your take. I'm just going to kind of like wind you up and let you go in a minute. But just worth saying, at the time of recording, Wayne Pivac is still in charge of Wales, although he's abandoned a recce to France. And lots of papers are reporting this, that he is going to be moved on very, very quickly, with Warren Gatland the front runner to take over. That news was broken by Steph Thomas of this parish, of course. Finger on the pulse, as always. As I said to him yesterday, he's making more headlines than Charlotte Church these days. But from your perspective, mate, let's start with Georgia. Just how bad a defeat was that?
Yeah. And, you know, that feels like a long time ago now.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's weird. And we did, you know that thing where we always complain about the third game in the autumn, which is the weak opposition. We always make loads of changes and then we always play awful and scrape a win against the crap side, you know, all that. But we didn't make many changes and yet we were still awful. And the right team was, half time we looked like, okay, we might kick on again and everything be fine. But then a couple of fluff chances, not even chances, just like botched line out moves or whatever happened. A couple of unforced errors and it just deflated everyone on the pitch, everyone in the stands. And I don't even know. Look, the issue there is we've become less than the sum of our parts as a team.
Yeah, that's the
whoever
point,
takes it, whoever he picks, it turns into less. That's why we lost against Italy. That's why we lost against Georgia. That's why we shipped a massive lead against Australia, because we're less than the sum of our parts. Man for man, I won't go into too far down this road in case it gets awkward, but man for man, we're clearly a better team than Georgia, apart from the scrum, obviously. But, you know, we're clearly a better side, and yet we managed to, you know, get beat by a lower second tier or higher. I don't know if they're lower second tier or higher second tier nation, but lower second tier nation.
I think they would be. Yeah, in European terms, they're higher. But when you factor in the South Sea Islands sides,
exactly. Yeah,
and others around the world. Yeah, it's really not a good one. And also, hate to dig you out on this early doors, but you are old enough to remember the defeats against Romania and Canada more clearly than I would.
Yeah.
How does this one rank in terms of most embarrassing defeats you've seen as a Wales fan?
The one that hurt me the most was, it's not even really, in hindsight, it's not a shock now, but at the time it was the World Cup 91 losing to Samoa. Mm. Not just losing Samoa, getting absolutely filled in and battered.
Yeah,
like all our biggest players were going off injured because they were just getting munched by the likes of a young Pat Lam and Apollo Perolini.
Yeah.
That's the one. And the likes of them. And so
Fatty Alofa was playing that day as well, wasn't he? I think.
Yeah. Brian Lima, I imagine, as well. Yeah. And so in hindsight, that explains why they got filled in. But at the time, it was like, oh my God, this is pretty much a home World Cup. And we've just been, you know, humbled at home on our pitch. The other games, like the Romania thing, it was a half-assed fixture. Like, you know, no one really wanted to go, and it didn't surprise anyone. Well, it did surprise, but it was embarrassing. But it wasn't the same kind of thing. This was an important do-or-die game against Samoa, and we got absolutely battered. So that one felt worse at the time to me. Canada, you know... that there were good players in the Canada side, the likes of Al Sharon and Gareth Rees and what have you. But I don't know. I don't know. It's in us to just kind of lack motivation against weak sides and then get beat. But you can't do it twice in the same calendar year.
Yeah, I think that's it. And at home, both times as well. You know, I think back to the ones that really... And you're absolutely right with the World Cup one against Samoa made it... makes it much worse because there's so much on the line. And then, you know, the Fiji one in 2007, obviously Fiji aren't a complete dud side whatsoever. We just went out that day, I think, with a degree of complacency and then tried to take them on in a game of sevens, which is about the most ill-advised thing you could ever do.
A lot of people had called Fiji to beat us a long way out from the World Cup on that occasion, but we just can't... Yeah, like you said, we played directly into their hands. You know, so
which brings us nicely to the World Cup next year, where of course we have Australia and Fiji in the same group again.
We also have Georgia,
who at the time no one really saw as a banana skin, but clearly they did.
Yeah.
With all that in mind, there was no option after the Georgia defeat, surely, for the WRU to keep Pivak on, was there?
Actually, I was worried when we were a long way up against Australia. I was worried if we continue scoring and this turns into 40 plus points, maybe even pushing on towards 50, because it looked like that way. Sometimes I was thinking, oh no, they're gonna give him a pass and keep him. Mm-hmm. And then obviously, you know, that was, I wasn't even wishful thinking. You know, that was dreamland because we caved completely. I wanted him gone after the Italy game, so there's no point in me giving my opinion. As the WIU, it looks as though the way that he's been, like you mentioned earlier, he's been stopped from traveling to France, and this planned review they keep quoting in quotation marks in headlines everywhere. It looks like they had made their mind, the WIU had made their mind about the Georgia, that he'd have to go, and things are in motion now. I dare say he's being called down to the office or something. Or I think so. Yeah. I think yourself or someone said they're printing his P45 as we speak.
that wasn't me. All right. But it's I know exactly what you mean with regards to the Australia game. There's definitely a point where I thought that might be the case. And in a way, it probably would have been better for him to lose like 16-9. Do you know what I mean? Like one of those scores, oh, Australia scored in the first half and then we never quite go. And then an air of respectability to the score. But to blow a lead that big and a side that, I think I saw it quoted somewhere, there's 40 players missing from that Australia side for one reason or another, and obviously of varying degrees of quality. But there's a lot of, their first string was not a part of that, really, aside from a few of the younger players who've established themselves over the autumn.
Exactly. You know, and they are actually, in true Aussie fashion, unearthed some gems as a result. That winger looks really good. But it's important, I think, to remember, in amongst everything else that's going on, if Australia were anywhere near full strength, we would not have been 21 points up all. Because the way they were caving at the driven line out is just with Will Skelton in the side, it just would not happen. Or the other guy who's CEO, who's away to Exeter, or not Exeter, Leicester, is like anyway, outside the window, so we couldn't play for Australia. Players like that, we would not have gone into such a big lead. In fact, it would have been the usual tight game with them winning at the end, probably. They were full strength. The words used in the commentary were a patched together side and in certain positions, third choice players. So that's why we were so far in front, and makes it all the more balmy that we managed to completely cave in. It all started with a interception.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. And obviously, not something you expect to see. It's a typical trip, didn't he? And it's not a player who's kind of renowned for professional fouls, and the wheels just came off thereafter. And it's really interesting there. You said the bit you said at the start of the show about Samoa being, you know, such a painful defeat because it really mattered. And I think that's the thing with these games. That game to me, even if we'd have won it, looked like two sides that have been flogged to death by their respective unions. That was Australia's 15th test of the season.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember what number it is for Wales, but it's outside the window. It is, for both sides, it's last men standing.
Yeah.
It is who's available to play. Have you got a mate who could pick you up from Bedwas on the way into Cardiff to play? Can you please just pull together a side?
Yeah.
And so, you know, to gauge anyone based on that result, if we'd have won it, wouldn't have been right. It wouldn't have been true form. And the fact that we then blew a monstrous lead, that tells you something about where that side is. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it's less than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, you know, and the expressions on the players' faces, the body language of the players, you know, they talk about losing the dressing room and that kind of nonsense. But the players got an expression which is a cross between shell shock and grief because they know they're representing their country, but they are as aware as anyone else that it's likely to go wrong at any second, and they're powerless to stop it. The only responsibility lies with the coach. If you've got to set up the system, whatever they're trying to play to doesn't work, they don't believe in it, and they know everything's likely to fall apart, and you can see it on their faces.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing was is that there was a half decent bit of rugby played at certain points during that side. You know, I thought Alan Wynne-Jones had his best game, again, taking into account the opposition and everything.
Yeah.
But he had his best game for a long time, I thought. And obviously went out there with a point to prove to try and dampen down any criticism that he was past it, and played in a very different manner and looked to, you know, looked to offload one-handed and all that kind of stuff. You know, there were glimmers of hope, which in a way makes it even worse, the fact that everything just came crumbling down in the last 15 minutes of the game. So, yeah but I mean, it's one of those. I think you're right. I'm fairly certain that they made up their mind after the Georgia game, having backed him through the summer after Italy. I think to lose to both at home is just, you know, it's unacceptable. And the interesting thing for me, and also as well, I mean, you see a lot of horrible stuff get written on social media, and I spent far too much time on Twitter this weekend. And it's nothing personal, of course. I don't know the guy. I'm sure he's a really nice bloke, and there's no need for any personal attacks on him at all.
No.
But it's just, you know, the evidence of it is that this is not working.
Yeah.
But you know, you can't win three games with that squad of players in the course of a season. Lose at home to Italy, lose at home to Georgia. Whether it's 1 year out from a World Cup or it's 4 years out, you can't expect that to happen and there not to be repercussions.
Yeah, I don't know who the driver behind a decision at the WIU will be exactly. I know it's, you know, a board and a committee and all this thing, but who's in the WIU is going to say, okay, that's enough. We can't keep this guy now. That whatever anyone else around the table thinks, I'm saying we can't carry on. And I think they probably only persevered after the other. It's not, you know, things weren't going well before the Italy game. You know, we'd had a terrible Six Nations up before that, and there was other periods where we'd been poor, and that is a win rate across the 3 years that he's been in charge is not good. So, you know, it was already shaky. He needed a good Six Nations, and then he needed a good autumn as well to keep his job. And I think the only reason they persevered with him this long is because it's expensive to get to the severance is expensive.
Yeah.
And on the back of, you know, the economic situation with coming back from COVID. In fairness, you know, we've talked about this fourth game, the outside the window game, is the one that is the profit game. Everything else pays the bills, and then this game is the profit. Well, even England are doing an outside the window game this time. Yeah. If they do an outside the window game, it's against the Barbars with the second string England side. You know what I mean? And all the good players are back at their club or they're resting or whatever. But even they did a full international this year, and that's because they're all in recovery mode from the losses. And I think that is probably kept Wayne in a job, the lack of money for a while.
I think it has.
But now it's, you know, now that I think their hands are tied, you know, I don't think they've got anywhere to go, but they're going to have to fork out. And it's lucky, I think, really, that Gatland is available, because I think most other options, if you look at the betting for the next Wales coach, most of those people are not available.
I know. You look down it and it's, yeah, Scott Robertson, Ronan O'Gara.
Yeah.
You think they're not going to take it now. Even if they took it after the World Cup, they're not going to take it now.
Yeah.
So you look down that. And then after that, you start to think, right, well, okay, where are we heading with this? Liz Truss, Penny Mordaunt, what are we actually looking at here?
Well, even if you pay out to the severance to Wayne Pivac, let's say by some miracle Scott Robertson was interested, you've got to buy him out of his existing contract at the Crusaders. So it gets even more expensive that way. And according to, I think, I don't know if it was Squidge Rugby or someone who knows what they're talking about, and like myself on Twitter, said that he's already been spoken to by the New Zealand RFU, and he's also got a fallback option of the England RFU if it doesn't come off. So why you want to talk to us now with a side in this state is, even though, you know, leaving aside the fact that he's still tied into his current contract. So he's actually second favourite. And if what Squidge says is right, it's the weakest second favourite in any betting event there's ever been. I would say, you know, Gatland's price is shortening all the time, so it's probably no one else in the running, I would argue.
Well, you're absolutely right. I think that you take a look around the world of rugby and those options just aren't there.
Yeah.
And there's no point doing it and saying, right, well, let's take a punt on someone for a year. You need someone to come in and do an absolute clean-up operation here, don't you? That's the realms we're looking at. Just to go back to a point, this is something that we spoke about with Steph last week, is the financials have definitely played a big part in why Pivac is still in a job, at this stage. But at the same time, you have to look at it and say, what were the financial impacts of keeping him in place now and then having a disastrous World Cup? How are you going to sell tickets for those World Cup warm-up games, which is something I mentioned last week? Mm-hmm. And then if you do sleepwalk out of the pool stages, what is that going to do? You know, we're at a stage, it happened in 2007 and that was bad, but we're also at a stage now where there is so much more competition for attention, whether it's other sports, and football is thriving in Wales, you know, and then you've also got entertainment factors, whether it's Netflix, Xbox, whatever it might be. Mm. How are you going to, you know, how are you going to capture an audience? And it's not walking out of a World Cup at the group stages when the eyes of the world are actually on Wales. So
it's even deeper than that. I mean, people watch, you mentioned competition for people's time, all the other things that are competing. You can't even get people to look up from their mobile phone when they're watching TV anymore. Yeah. You know, it's sports. People half watch sport over the top of their phone these days. Mm. You know, that's how much competition. I think, you know, I covered it before. The Gallagher Premiership, the penny has dropped over there because their games have gone completely open since the pandemic. They've realized they're in the entertainment business and they've stopped being up the jumper, most of them. They will pick and go still at the line, but the goal line dropout has killed the effectiveness of that because you used to be guaranteed a scrum back if it went pear-shaped. So they've bailed on that and they've just gone all out. You know, all their games are like 38, 39, 44, 40. You know, it's just a complete turnaround over there. And I think it can't be by mistake. They've decided that they if they're going to compete, they've got to be more entertaining.
It's not a bad approach, though, Murph. I wouldn't mind seeing it from the rulemakers of the sport as well, to be honest. We're in a stage where games often last 2 hours long with the amount of interference from the TMO over the most menial of things. Mm. And I just think we've got to a stage where we've had the TMO for, what, 20 years or so? About that, isn't it? You know, initially it was just for grounding over the line and stuff like that.
Yeah, but I don't know.
The more and more we've used it, the more and more we've realised that there is stuff going on all over the field. And you've got to find the way to use it that means the game is most interesting, right? So if there's serious foul play, if someone's nutted someone or stamped on them outside the shot, yeah, of course, bring it back for that. Minor infringements I'm not interested in. Mm. Also, as I say every single week, if you're going to take a look at a shot to the head, can we just start sending people off again?
There's
so many messy things that you could be doing to make the game more interesting and more safe and get people more interested in playing it from a grassroots up level. And that's the situation that we find ourselves in.
Yeah. It's difficult not to get really depressed about rugby union, isn't it? What I will say, just going slightly off topic, I suppose, is there's a lot of media types or Twitter types now talking about changing the coach won't fix anything, you know, the wider problems and all that.
But do you know what? I'm really glad you brought this up. Yeah. We're gonna take a really quick break,
okay.
and then I'm gonna let you go on it because this is definitely a big thing I want to get your take on.
Okay.
Right, Murph's hot take on that coming up after this quick break. Right, Murph. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Lots of people on Twitter saying that changing the coach doesn't fix it. I think Mike Phillips was one of those people saying that as well, actually.
Well, the wider problems they talk about, you know, there's much deeper problems in the... Yeah, but you can't... Just because the WRU as an organisation is pretty dysfunctional and, you know, the game is in real trouble, participation is dwindling, grassroots is struggling, the professional clubs are... as we know very well, in a mess, that doesn't mean you can keep winning. it's two separate things. You know, no one anywhere thinks changing the national coach is going to fix everything by any means, but it doesn't mean just because there's wider problems doesn't mean you can keep the guy. And like you mentioned, I don't wish him any harm and I don't want to slag him off. It's just a fact that he's not good enough, and therefore you've got to get rid of him. But all this other stuff, I suppose some of it is because it's going badly and people are talking about sacking the coach, there's more people paying attention that would normally be paying attention to the rugby politics that we end up dwelling on. But we know it's been going on for months and years, and you know, you could go into a really deep dive over where the actual beginning of the problems were. But we know it's pre-existing, and even the AGM recently, where there was the vote just didn't go through, and you know, my club were there. I couldn't go because it was a Sunday morning, but two representatives from my club were there. The proposal to have I forget the details of it now.
To
be able to appoint an independent chairman without having to consult the clubs. Mm. That was basically what it was. Both the votes from my club were in support. Two or three clubs stood up in that meeting and questioned it, but they didn't. They weren't arguing with the principal. The main gist of their argument was the WRU, haven't explained properly how this works. Mm. So the WRU failed to make their case properly. That's basically what happened. No one was especially against it. And my colleague, as to her, who was in the room, said there was people like that, I won't name them because it doesn't make any difference who it was really, who were just dubious because they hadn't had the case explained to them properly. And then he said the rest, because it worked out to about 35% or something like that, and voted against, the rest of them just simply don't trust the WRU, which history proves is a very good position to hold. So that's why that vote didn't go through. I think there might have been one or two clubs who disagreed with it, but on the whole, it was basically people saying that you haven't made the case properly, you haven't explained exactly how this is going to work, and just clubs with a automatic distrust of everything that WRU ever says and does.
Yeah.
And that's why that particular calamity in the recent history of our sport came to pass. But
you needed 75% to get that motion passed.
Yeah.
65% did vote.
Yeah. 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 And you know, it's right in a way that as a result, the chairman's standing down.
Yeah.
Because maybe he agrees with the people who said you haven't made the case properly and took that as his cue to get the hell out of Dodge. I don't know what is he. I mean, obviously they give reasons in writing, like family reasons and all this nonsense. But maybe he's just said, right, like, well, I've been unsuccessful there, and I'm not up to the job. So now we're going to get Ian Evans or another committee man from a small club somewhere around the country who will end up in charge. But hopefully they'll, this is the thing, we've probably got to wait for the next AGM. Maybe they call an EGM, I don't know. We've got to wait for the next AGM to get round to the point where the opportunity is for the chairman to explain it well and properly and convince the room that is, and provide some kind of detail over how it will work. And then maybe, hopefully, they can change the rules so it doesn't have to be 75% to carry. Maybe. Well, it sounds a bit like a referendum, doesn't it? Maybe 50-50. And it can go through. But that's only the start of the things that need to be fixed. There's loads of other stuff. And that, again, going back to my original point of why we got onto that subject, is that's got nothing to do with the fact the coach can't coach.
No, it hasn't. And that's exactly it. I think you have to look at are there massive systemic governance problems with the Welsh Rugby Union and the whole setup of the game in Wales? Yes, there are. Should that side be beating Georgia and beating Italy at home? Yes, it should.
Yeah.
So that, you know, there are definitely big things that need to be addressed. But that doesn't mean that you ignore the other things and just go, right, well, you give the head coach a free ride because he's not been able to get success because there are problems elsewhere.
Yeah, the logic just doesn't follow. We're going to keep this failing coach because we're also crap. You know, you just got no choice. And I think maybe the reason why a lot of these journalists are making the point about this wider problem is because now more people are listening, maybe. But it doesn't change the fact that, you know, if this was soccer, he would have been gone ages ago.
Yeah, and again, I don't think that's necessarily a route that you want to go down because, you know,
no.
I look at respective you know, particularly kind of Premier League football teams and stuff like that. And you think, well, actually, you don't get time enough to shape it. Therefore, players in the dressing room know that they've got more security than the coach. So if they just stop playing, then they'll be there and a new coach will take over. And that's not, I don't think that's a healthy way to run any sporting organisation. And I certainly don't think it's one that you can do in rugby. And it also, it ignores the fact that you can do that if you're Chelsea when you're backed by Abramovich, or you can do it when you're, you know, backed by a Gulf state like many of the big football sides are. You get, like we said, you know, the financials in Welsh rugby are absolutely crippling at the moment across all levels. So there's no way you can afford to do this. However, if you look at the bigger picture, for me, the long-term impact of the health of the game in Wales and the money that goes with it will be severely impacted if you go to the World Cup and end up, you know, the best I think that they could hope for is that they beat Georgia and Fiji and get out of the group into the quarterfinals with the current setup. You know, based on all form, that's all I could see. If you bring Gatland in, who God knows, by the time you listen to this, he might even be in. If you bring him in, I would trust that he would get a much better tune out of that set of players to, I don't know whether we'd top the group or not, but you'd have a much better chance of it. Or even if you finish second, there is a, you know, a chance of taking on, I think it's England or Argentina, isn't it, in the next round, which I still wouldn't back a Pivac-led side to win.
No.
But would Gatland fancy one of those? Yeah, absolutely. I think he would. And has the experience at three previous World Cups, knows the bulk of those players, knows that they'll go out there and play for him. So, you know, that to me makes perfect logical sense.
Well, and your point there about he knows the players will go out there and play for him. I think they'd be delighted to have anyone else at the moment because the point I made earlier about the looks on their faces as they're playing, you know. It'll be totally rejuvenating for most of them. I mean, a lot of people are making some points about selection. Various people not picked for this particular squad, in my view, but it is well beyond the point of who's playing at the moment. It is just literally a case of gelling any 15 that happens to be Welsh and getting them to play together on the pitch properly and know what they're doing. So I think obviously professional players keep their mouth shut, but I think if and when the announcement comes, they'll be punching the air in their living room because it'll be a chance to turn the page for them all, I think.
This has always been my concern from the start, was that, and again, this is not a, you know, an assassination on Wayne Pivac. As I say, I don't know him at all, but to appoint someone who doesn't have a huge amount of silverware. Okay, so yeah, of course he did. You know, tremendous job at the Scarlets to win the league, and the following win in Europe. You know, that was an absolutely massive achievement. The semi-finals in Europe. That was definitely getting a side to punch massively above their weight. However, when Gatlin came in, he had Heineken Cups and English Premierships and NPC titles coming out of his arse. You knew that he'd straight away walk into that dressing room and be able to command it. And it all felt a little bit similar to the Gareth Jenkins scenario where, to be fair, Gareth Jenkins had won a hell of a lot more. But it felt like someone who was used to one environment and was then having to take a big step up. And I just don't think you can do that at international level. My worry was always that he'd walk into that dressing room and it'd be very difficult to command the respective players who've got 100 caps. And yeah, I don't know if that's the case, right? I don't know. But all you can go on is the body language that we've seen, not just in the autumn campaign, I think for large chunks of Pivac's tenure.
Yeah, it's a good point you make there about his record and compared to other coaches, because when Pivac arrived at the Scarlets, the fans hated him for the first season.
Yeah.
And then they suddenly turned into like a Harlem Globetrotter. I know I say that a lot, but they turned into an amazing side for about two seasons.
Yeah.
Then he was given the job. And then for the last 18 months of his tenure,
they
were garbage again. So the WRU, whoever makes that decision to appoint Wayne, based it on two good seasons at Llanelli.
I think it was Gareth Davis and Martin Phillips were probably the...
Right.
Yeah, well, certainly they were the two.
Gareth Jenkins would have had decades.
Yes, you're absolutely
of
right.
Good rugby at club level, admittedly one club, and that backfired. So yeah, the thing is, I'm all for appointing local coaches, which is effectively what Wayne is because he was coaching a regional side. But he's not, obviously not Welsh, but he's still coaching a regional side. But he just, the track record just wasn't long enough. And when you took Barkley and Byrne out to that side, they were nowhere near as good again. And so it looks, the decision now, because it was made a long way out, wasn't it, before Gatland had finished. The decision now looks really, really weak. Even if it had come off, even if Pivac had done quite well as coach, say he hadn't lost to Italy and lost to Georgia, and he won a couple of other games that he should have. Look, whatever happens, we're fairly certain he's going to get the boot. He still won a test in South Africa that no other coach has ever done. So he was only the bad performances. If he took them out, he wouldn't be far away from keeping his job. But that aside, the appointment now, based on the fact that he had two good seasons at the region, it looks really bad. I mean, it looks knee-jerk, doesn't it, from this distance, though?
And you're right.
And it also looks cheap.
Well, it wasn't a knee-jerk one, was it? Because, you know, like you say, it was done well over a year of Gatland's ending his contract. So they made the decision early. I want to say it was like summer of 2018, and Gatland didn't go till after the World Cup. No.
Yeah, well, when I say knee-jerk, I mean, wow, this guy's got a side playing well. Let's make him national coach. What about a few more years of getting a side to play well before you give him the biggest job in our country, sport-wise? You get into the realms of breaking the bank to get Gatland again for the next coach, because obviously if Gatland comes in, it's going to be until the World Cup, and then he's looking for something else to do after the World Cup. So the important appointment is there. So that'll be, December 2023. Yeah. That's going to be someone. It's going to be someone expensive, I would imagine. And it's going to be someone with a proper, if they're not an international coach already, it's going to be someone with proper long-term success at club level.
The word, I think, is it's pedigree. Yeah. So, you know, you look at the most successful international coaches had that pedigree going into it. So obviously Gatland with us, you know, even like Joe Schmidt, I know his World Cup record isn't outstanding, but he achieved some amazing things with Ireland, albeit with a tremendous squad of players. You know, he had a fantastic pedigree. And then taken over from him, Andy Farrell, I know, okay, perhaps didn't have all of the silverware, but he had that pedigree and that respect of a dressing room walking in. No one is going to piss around with Farrell. You know, you knew that.
His pedigree is not just his coaching, it's his player, it's who he is or was as a player. Whereas there isn't that with the Pivac or other coaches you might name, you know. You're picking the character. I think he'd already worked with the Lions at that stage as well, before, and England before he'd been involved.
He'd worked with the Lions twice, I think.
Yeah. So there was, you know, it was a long-term line with him. What was Pivac doing before the Scarlets employed him?
He was Fiji head coach for a bit, and before that, he was a policeman.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it was his police work.
But wasn't he coaching unprofessional rugby in Australia or something while he was?
Yeah, I couldn't actually tell you what it was, where he came to the Scarlets from. But yeah, you're right. It's I think in order to get though, you know, to get that right, you've got to have a serious pedigree, and it wasn't there, so it was always going to be a risk. Mm. And when it comes to December 2023. It's not going to be cheap. Whoever you get is not going to be cheap. If you want someone who's going to be able to have that proven track record, they do not come cheaply for very good reasons.
Yeah, and again, your point about 100 cap players, are they going to listen to someone who's not a big name?
I'm not sure they will. Or you know, it takes a certain character to be able to command the respect of a dressing room of 100, 150 cap players. It does. It's a difficult thing to do because they've been there and seen it all. And you know, you've got to have a really strong reputation, a big character and amazing man management skills to be able to pull those things off. And in a way, at international level, I think that's probably much more important than actually the nuts and bolts of the coaching. You get so little time with the players. You've got to get your selection right. You've got to create an atmosphere where players want to play and they want to play for you and they buy into the whole system. And if you do that, then you've got a half-decent chance of success. If any one of those things goes wrong, the whole thing goes to shit.
Mm. At this distance, who would you have after the next World Cup?
Oh my God, there's a question. That's an absolutely brilliant question. I've said it before. I
don't think we'd get Scott Robertson. See, that's the one everyone talks about. I don't think he's got any intention of coming to Wales because he's got the world. He's got the world to choose from. You know.
Yeah, and I think it would be a massive risk for him. I think Ronan O'Gara would be a risk as a head coach. I think he's an outstanding reputation, but he keeps getting dragged into niggly little spats in the press, and you know, which is great for selling papers and for entertainment.
He hasn't really moved on from his playing days, has he?
No, yeah, he's just kind of there with a red face, gobbing off at someone.
Yeah.
So I think that would be a big, potentially a risk to take that step up. I've said it before. Someone I've had my eye on for ages is Jamie Joseph. I think he would be I think if you're looking for someone who has test experience, huge character, and has implemented a style of play with a very limited pool of resources, then he's someone I would like to take a look at. But that said, you know, like you said a fortnight ago, Eddie Jones got Japan playing nice rugby, and England can't string three passes together, so it doesn't necessarily translate into that. But the appeal for someone like Joseph is it's the experience at international level and that kind of clear rugby philosophy. If he could bring that to Wales, he might take a look at Wales and go, you're not the players to do this.
No.
At the moment, we don't have any kind of philosophy, and that's what kind of appeals to me at the moment.
Yeah, there's quite a few around who appeal to me, but I've always been a Pat Lam guy. I thought he should have been...
I like Pat Lam, yeah.
Yeah, I thought he should have been chased by Cardiff at various stages as well. He's not international quality, international experience, but I don't think it would be an issue for him. There's a few. I like the Jamie Joseph shout.
Do you think Pat Lam should have won more stuff though, given that he's got tremendous riches at Bristol? I really like him, for the record. Well, I really like him.
They're wobbling.
I wouldn't be disappointed.
Yeah. They're wobbling now. Semi Randrandra is like a key to everything they do if they're going to go well, and he's unavailable all the time, injured or whatever. So it depends how you know the thing about difficult second album. He's going to be his difficult second wave because he's had this particular squad that he's put together now. He needs to freshen that squad up and see where if he can pull off another I suppose one of the issues for English clubs now is the ever decreasing salary cap. Yep. So Pierre Towers looks like he's past his peak. And then he got Semi Randrandra's too expensive. And then, so where do they go as a squad from there? I don't know why you ended up on a deep dive in Bristol, but it'll be a good indicator of how good he actually, I think we already know he's good because of what he was able to do at Connaught. But if he can rejuvenate Bristol again, then then he's going to start getting even bigger job offers, I would imagine.
You're right. He's a coach I really, really like. And to go back to that point about him as a player and as a character, again, I think your dressing room listens to Pat Lam.
Yeah,
I think it really does. And that's absolutely crucial at this stage, as it was post 2007 when we needed someone to come in and really command the dressing room, show them the vision and say, here's where we're headed.
Yeah, I mean, if you start going all over the world, there's plenty around. You know, I wouldn't, you know, if they could get Wayne Smith, that would be all right.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just, look, at the moment, they're talking about Gatland Temporary and they're also mentioning Steve Tandy alongside him.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the problem with Tandy is he's contractually bound with the Scottish Rugby Union at the moment. So again, you've got, but mind you, you have to buy people out regardless. You have to pay off the existing coaching staff as well if you want to get shot of them. The other one that seems to be doing the rounds today is suggesting that Howley might come back with Gatland.
All right. Well, the only issue I was going to mention with Steve Tandy is there's a lot of Ospreys in the squad who can remember when he went pear-shaped at the Ospreys.
I have a theory about this. I think, you know, and maybe this is revisionist history, if you were to compare his reign in charge of the Ospreys versus all the other head coaches, I actually don't think it stacks up badly at all. because he essentially the plug had been pulled on the Galactico era, so he lost the Hollers and Collins and Marshalls and
the money, and all
those players.
Yeah.
And I think he managed to create a pretty competitive side when all of that went. And yes, it did go wrong at the end.
I think the issue, or I might have it wrong, I don't know, but I suspect that he'd lost the changing room at the Ospreys, and that was the ultimate reason why he had to go. So how many of the current squad would be that keen to see him back? You know, in another few years, most of them, the older Ospreys players, their international days will be over. So I wouldn't disagree with Steve Dandy coming in at all at some point in the future, because he's done a great job. Since he left the Ospreys, he went down to Super Rugby. I can't remember which club it was down there. And then came back up with Scotland. And he's done wonders with Scotland.
And the Lions.
Yeah. And been a fantastic coach. If anything, the Ospreys experience has improved him as a coach, if you know what I mean. So I wouldn't object to him ending up back in the Welsh, but I think it might just be a little bit too soon in terms of the relationships that he'd have with the players.
When did he go? About 2017? I would say we were doing this. Oh, pod. I think he went about a year into us doing this. So about 2017-ish, I would guess. Yeah. And I can't think are there that many players left over from that era? I mean, obviously Alan Wynn, but
Adam Beard was still on the scene.
I'm not sure Beard was, you know.
Maybe not. Mm. I can't work out when it was, because it was before the pandemic, and time before the pandemic doesn't really add up anymore. So I don't know exactly when that was. It might not be 5 years ago, you know. I know what I could do. I just text my mate Griff and ask him when he left the Ospreys.
I could look at this smartphone that's in my hand and say.
Yeah, yeah. Google, well, I don't know. Even if we had a firm date, I don't know what I would prove. But I don't know. I just think at the moment there's too many players around who have been coached by Steve before, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. It was 2018, by the way.
Oh, okay.
It was 2018. Yeah. So,
I mean, that's a long time in rugby, 4 years, but still.
Yeah, yeah. But you're right. There would be players around that camp who will remember him from that point in time. So, but again, it's whether or not his stock has obviously risen since then. And if you've got, if Gatland is there saying, right, this is the guy, listen to him, then I don't know. My guess is that you'd probably be inclined to.
Inclined to listen. You can't really criticise the support staff coaches at the moment, because the buck stops with the head guy, but the defence at the moment is no good.
No, it's not. And this is the interesting bit, is it's very tempting to look at this and say, right, even if it's only for a year, we're back, we're getting the band back together and we're going to go to the World Cup semi-finals again. Mm. We do not have Sean Edwards this time.
No.
And that is, it's been a massive blow.
They could go after him after the next World Cup.
Didn't he sign a four-year extension?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I mean, you could, if you buy him out of that. He wants to be a head coach. Mm. Someone will give him that job.
Eventually,
He strikes me as the kind of guy who wouldn't get on well at the RFU. I know, because they tried to offer him the bloody Saxons job, didn't they, when Wales took him as defence coach, which I believe he was massively pissed off about. And I don't know, it was a long time ago now. Maybe if they offered him the chance to succeed, Eddie, he might take it up. But I mean, look, he's an exceptional coach. He's an era-defining defence coach, and was such a massive part of our success.
The issue, I think, with Sean Edwards and possibly being England head coach is they can't be confident of what he's going to say in a press conference.
No,
he's likely to lose his temper and just rip the head off someone verbally. In it, and they don't. I mean, Eddie's quite spiky. He doesn't like.
He doesn't like journos, does he?
No,
he doesn't like speaking to the press.
Yeah, well, he doesn't like the scrutiny. Basically, he doesn't like scrutiny. I think Sean Edwards is more comfortable with that, but at the same time, he could lose his temper over something mediocre and just blow up.
I remember an interview he did with Ross Harris, where he was. I don't know whether he tore a strip off him or he just gave him really one-word answers and gave him the absolute death stare the whole time. And Ross is about the nicest guy that you'll meet in rugby as well.
Mm.
And you just think that, there's the RFU way of wanting to control a certain image would not fit particularly well with Sean Edwards.
Yeah.
Strange, isn't it? Obviously, you know, he's a rugby league legend and all that, but he's giving the death stare to someone and he's 5 foot nothing. He's a tiny, tiny man, but he's still frightening.
Pound for pound might be one of the hardest players to have played. Well, it is without doubt one of, might be the hardest player to have played either code of the game, pound for pound. Because you're right, he's so small, but so hard. Like, he's just made of teak.
Yeah. I mean, top flight professional at 17. Yeah. So it's just, it's still weird though, isn't it? You know, there's a thing sometimes, you know, when you hear stories from like being a Cardiff boy, you hear stories from around town where someone's just like bumped into someone in a club or in a pub in town. And because they were quite short, they haven't apologized. And next thing you know, they're on their ass because the tiny bloke has twatted them. That's Sean Edwards. If you bummed into a bloke, say, oh, sorry, mate. Just spilled your drink, did I? No, you're fine. Oh, good, great. Because it's Sean Edwards, 5'6". You just go, oh, whatever. Next thing you know, he's fucking decked you. I hear stories about little fellas in town who are absolutely nails. And I think...
Do any of them want a job as Welsh defence coach?
I don't think they're even into rugby. They're probably into boxing. Yeah.
Sticking with the rugby league thing, here's one for you, Murph, because you watch more English rugby than I do. Kevin Sinfield's been involved in Union for a bit now. Is it this season or the season before that he went to Leicester?
Season before, I think. Yeah.
So he was there for the Championship when he decided, right?
Yeah.
Now, again, he's someone who I'm immensely in awe of, given his... I mean, I remember him as a league player as well, and, you know, not dissimilar to Edwards in terms of his toughness and his leadership. You know, him bringing those fresh ideas over to Leicester, he's a name that I've heard banded around a bit. I mean, I don't think you're going to get him in the short term, but is he someone you'd like to see in and around the setup?
I was. No.
Really?
Yeah. No. He's in his first flush of rugby union, and going back to what we said earlier about having a full-on pedigree in the sport.
Not as head coach.
Yeah, as defence coach. Yeah, maybe.
I mean, he's got a season more top flight rugby experience than Gethin has when he got the job.
Yeah, yeah, but there's again that's the Andy Farrell effect, isn't it? We know that he's one of the finest props ever to pull the shirt on, and he was a great defender and all the other nonsense that goes with it. So
and was coached by Edwards for so long that I think there was a certain degree of that continuity they were hoping to bring. The Hayward example didn't work.
I'm not against Sinfield coming here as thing, but he wouldn't be like top of the list. I don't know. Like, who would say he's going to be appointed by whoever gets the top job, and if he comes here, and who would have a connection with him? Like, who would, like, Gatland had worked with Sean Edwards before, and, you know, it's that kind of connection that would need to be there for it to happen, I think. I don't think they would go out of their way to get him otherwise.
Well, his head coach at the moment is Steve Borthwick, who is someone who's got international experience and is, you know, is highly regarded as a, you know, as an English Premiership to his title, English Premiership title to his CV. I wouldn't be surprised if they look at, I'm not saying it will be him, but I wouldn't be surprised if they look at a few of those kind of candidates. But again, to go back to your point.
Yeah, fair enough.
Is he one season in and that's it? Or is there a lot more to come? Because I think he does have that. He has that international experience, albeit as a forwards coach, and is held in high regard. I'm not saying it's the answer. I just wouldn't
be surprised. And then he would want to bring members of his team with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's another one. He's in the betting. But to me, if I was going... Looking at the first of all, I'm not 100% sure I want an Englishman in charge of the Welsh team. Mm. It's bad enough having a New Zealander. It's just the way it is. We just don't produce coaches anymore. It's just a thing. But if I was looking at the Gallagher Premiership, I would go straight to Mark McCall.
Yeah,
That's where I would go if I was looking at availability is a different subject altogether, I guess. But that's where I would. He is the guy as far as I'm concerned. And then you've got Rob Baxter as well. And the Borthwick, I can't remember his name. Yeah. Borthwick thing. He is fairly new in coaching. You know, I know he's been assistants elsewhere, but as a head coach, he's fairly new. I don't know what season he's in with Leicester. Maybe three or four.
Three, maybe. Yeah,
that's a little bit Wayne Pivac.
It's a good chat. I also the other interesting thing is, you know, you cast your mind back to, I mean, maybe this is when Lancaster got the job, but you know, names like Jim Mallander and Conor O'Shea, who were like the trendiest coaches in English Premiership rugby at the time. None of them have coaching jobs anymore. I know Conor O'Shea might be the one who pulls the trigger on Eddie Jones. And Jim Mallander, I think the last time I checked, was doing something in Scotland, maybe. But you know, none of them are involved in coaching anymore. And
no.
I kind of wonder why is that? What is it about that, particularly from the English Premiership, that your stock can be so high 1 minute? I know Conor went over to coach Italy.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because it's a similar situation now. Someone like George Skivington is doing a great job at Gloucester.
Yeah.
You could imagine in a few years he'll be offered a big job somewhere and then not long after that, not be in coaching again.
Yeah.
So there is a shelf life, you know, with coaches anyway, you know, at any level. And it's only the really, really good coaches that do it year after year after year after year. And you're right about, like, Mallander was in charge when they were having all the deep runs into the European Cup. And
They got to the
being in the final. Having been way up, 16 points up at halftime, I think, or something like that.
He'd be bloody perfect for us then.
Actually, 16 is not enough for us. We wanted to be over 20 before we start to ship our leads. Thanks very much. But they're all a little bit flash in the pan, aren't they? We, you know, if you're going to give someone shitloads of money to do a really important job, you want them to have longer in the job. And in a way, that rules out Ronan Agara.
Yeah.
Because he's fairly new.
He is. All right, let's just finish then by talking about Gatland, which, you know, even 10 days ago seemed absurd that he might be taking us to a World Cup. What do you think we can expect? What will be going through his mind if he gets this job?
I think somewhere it'd be like, I think there'd be a lot from his point of view, because obviously you've spoken to him and you know, you're best buds with him now. But
some might say his stock has risen considerably since being on this, Murph.
Some would say that.
Me and Dan, and that's it.
With that kind of insight into the persona of the man, I reckon I think he's probably at home. Look, if this is being talked about in the press, it's probably already a done deal. But whenever it was that they approached him, probably a week ago or whatever, whatever the situation was, he probably had a stiff drink and thought, "Do I want to go through all that again?" Like, how much? Can my agent squeeze out of them to make me to put up with that job again? And more importantly, what have I got after the World Cup? And will this cock all that up?
I can't see that happening, you know. I think, honestly, all he needs to do is have a respectable Six Nations and get us out of the pool stages, and it will not in the slightest tarnish his reputation.
No. But the contract negotiation for after the World Cup will already be, you know, the talks they'll be underway.
This is a stopgap, which you know, will probably make him a few bob.
Yeah, no, I don't think whatever happens in this job is going to affect his next contract. But so long as it doesn't get in, I know it sounds weird, get in the way of his longer term aims, if you know what I mean. The stopgap is all it's going to be. And that's all, I mean, that's in a way all Wales need as well. We just need someone quality at short notice. And he fits the bill. So the only question is whether he wants to kind of relive it all again. You know, the goldfish bowl stuff about South Wales and, you know, all the stuff that goes with it.
You've only got to do it. You've only got to do it for the Six Nations. And then you're off, you know, I imagine one of the terms of him taking this, and I don't know this, will be that he also gets to control the pre-Rugby World Cup environment. So where they've done those spars in the past, and he's been very, very prescriptive about it. Or not him, but his coaching side have been very, very meticulous about how they prepare for a Rugby World Cup. And that's why we've inherently punched above our weight under him at a World Cup. It's because of the preparation. We just turn up fitter than many of those World Cups. We turn up fitter than anyone else.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, the only bit he's really got to do in the Goldfish Bowl is the Six Nations. If he comes back for a couple of games before that, he's going to be greeted by a Heroes a hero's welcome at Cardiff Arms Park or Rodney Parade or wherever he goes to watch a game.
Mm.
Six Nations, providing that goes okay. You know, you're then into it. I think he's got a free shot this time around. None of the bullshit that goes with having it full time.
Yeah, well, look, whoever, things are so bad at the moment. Whoever comes in has got a free shot, really. I mean, there's no other alternatives. No one else is being seriously mentioned as an interim coach anyway. So, but whoever, you know, if it was me, you know, I literally couldn't get any worse from where we are now. So, whoever takes the job for the next 12 months is, if they, you know, obviously if they're a serious coach, it's an open goal, because all you've got to do is stop us looking like we've never met. You know, that thing I keep saying, the players go on the pitch looking like they've never met before. And if you get us organised, well, you'll have everyone on your team, you know, the fans and the media and everything will be wonderful again. So it's an open goal for whoever takes it, but it just so happens that the only man likely to be available without having to be bought out of fucking loads of contracts is Warren Gatland. So you're right, he has got an open goal, but at the same time, like, he did 12 years under the microscope. So there's got to be some sort of baggage for him coming back. I know it's not going to affect his reputation. And like you say, as long as he doesn't have a terrible Six Nations, you know, everything probably will go okay for him. But he's still got to, you know, he's been out of the limelight. And so there's got to be a part of him thinking, you know, do I really want to be under that? And then obviously that's where the money comes in.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's all fairly good points. Sorry, that's a horrible thing to say. All good points, Murph.
fairly good's fine. I take fairly. I mean, fucking yeah. Wayne Pivak, I take fairly. Shit, you know.
Elsewhere, there was some regional rugby this weekend. Did you catch any of that?
Yeah, I that's the only positive we've had, is that unbelievable result in Cape Town. Unbelievable. I kept having to check that, like, the Sharks weren't putting their youth team out, because they were completely dominating them all over the pitch. And we've someone pointed out in comms yesterday, average defeat has been by 31 points for every region that's gone to South Africa over the last, was it 18 months or whatever it is? Average defeat of 31 points, and they went 35-0. Thomas Young, by the way, like, people are saying, One of the things that having to go about Wayne Pivak, about how can he have a Welsh squad without Thomas Young in it? But who do you drop? Do you drop Tipperick? Well,
this is a great point. And, you know, your stock always rises when you're not in. I mean, to be fair to Thomas Young, his stock has consistently risen because no one has really given him a run. But you're right. Who do you drop? You know, yeah. I mean, yeah, do you drop Tipperick? But even if you do, you've then got Reffel and Morgan and...
Well, Justin Tipperick is our main line-out ball at the moment. So the choice would be Jack Morgan or Tommy Reffel, and what have they done to deserve to be dropped?
Yeah,
you know, you just...
I mean, Jack Morgan actually is probably the only other bright spot of the weekend, because
he was.
I know lots of people have pointed this out, but it's the same guy who, you know, Pivak said didn't carry strong enough and wasn't
months ago enough. He left him out of the squad.
Which, you know, just looks completely bizarre now. Unless he's been in the gym for those 12 months, which I don't think he has.
No.
You know, it was just an extraordinary thing. There are lots of sevens. There are always going to be class players who miss out. And Thomas Young is one of those who, you know, keeps missing out, unfortunately. But
it wasn't 12 months ago, was it? It was a summer tour.
Was it Six Nations?
The summer tour, yeah.
Yeah.
To South Africa. He said he's too small to go to South Africa and needs to work on his strength. Well, I mean, he might be, you know, he might have done that. And that's why he played so well on the weekend. But it's just a situation we've been over before. We've got too many sevens, too many good sevens, and you can't pick them all. You just can't.
No, you can't. And I'm even, you know, as brilliant as Jack Morgan has been, I think there's a proper ding dong for an out and out seven, whoever takes over. If it's Gatland, I don't think he's gonna want two sevens in that back row.
No, I don't.
And I wouldn't be surprised actually if he went with Morgan over Tipperick and picked someone else at six. I mean, yeah, he mentioned when we spoke to him that he was so excited to see Lydiate back in a Welsh shirt. Obviously, he's subsequently picked up an injury, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him go with someone who's much more of a six, or a lock six hybrid with an out and out seven.
Well, some players who've fallen out of favour under Pivak are likely to come back. The Ross Moriartys of this world, He might take much.
I mean, how mad does that look?
I know, yeah. He might take a much closer look at Schunza, actually on the pitch rather than just in the squad. Might take a closer look at people, and even I don't know if he's playing his best rugby, but even Adam Wainwright was a big favourite of.
He wasn't playing his best rugby yesterday afternoon. I tell you that. And no. I love Aaron Wainwright, but he kept dropping the ball, which is most unlike him. He dropped it from two restarts. He dropped it when he was clean through on goal.
The Dragons weren't terrible in that game either.
Oh, we were all right.
Yeah, you know, obviously our expectations based on last season are very low because we just got every team got rings run around them. That was hard to say for some reason. Rings run around them last season, and they didn't. You know, they were competitive, and then when you
admittedly
add in
the, against the worst of the South African sides, but still, you know, there was an air of these are the games I was talking about at the start of the season that the Dragons had to eliminate is losing by 40, 50 points to anyone. You know, you can go and you lose and you may not even be in the game, but you just can't get drubbed by sides week in, week out and not expect it to affect morale. And
I'm not sure the Lions are the weaker Aussie South African side anymore. I think the Sharks are. Well, based on league position now, Sharks are dropping like a stone. But and Lions have improved a hell of a lot, you know, the way they were playing up here, beating the Ospreys and different sides up here. They're a different team. And it's weirdly doing it without any South African stars, which is depressing. But
I believe that's the case. When they had that purple patch back in Super Rugby, the Lions, I can't remember what they were called at the time, Transvaal, Gauteng Lions, but when they had that run, I think it was a squad that was built out of, wasn't built on, you know, having a bucket load of Springbok stars. I think that off the back of it, they went on to play for the national side elsewhere. So you're probably right, they are improving. We'll find out again. I think we've got them again in a fortnight's time in the European Challenge Cup. Go figure.
All right.
Home
or away?
Away.
Osh.
So we've got, I think, the Stormers next week. And then, anyway, I didn't mean to go into a deep dive into the Dragons fixture list. I just happened to see it earlier. But either way, a massive result for Cardiff. And
When they lost that, they had the great win against someone
Munster.
Good. Yeah. More recently than that, weren't they? And then they played someone away, someone weaker. I can't remember now the detail.
Munster was the first game of the season. Then they lost away in Scotland. And then there was a good win recently. Stormers
at home, and then they had to play someone Edinburgh away and got battered away. And I said on here at the time, the trouble is if they get nothing out of the Edinburgh game, because if they'd won that Edinburgh game, they'd have gone fourth or fifth. If they get nothing out of that, suddenly they've got to go to South Africa twice and they'll get nothing down in South Africa. And now they've got a winning bonus point in South Africa. Obviously, the Bulls are a different prospect altogether, but the most you'd come expecting to come out of South Africa was...
Yeah, a losing bonus point or two.
Or four tries, because the South Africans will lose concentration when they're 40 points up and you might be able to sneak four tries. So the most points they were going to get, in my eyes, on this mini tour, as they call them, was 2 points. So to be 5 points up already is unbelievable. I mean, I don't know how serious this is, but if things keep going this well, guys, they're a bit, I don't want to use any glib terms, but they're a bit schizophrenic as a side, aren't they? They can be hot like that. They were yesterday, and equally they can turn a little bit like the national team, actually. Equally, they can fall apart quite easily. But if they continue on this trajectory, Di Young might be the next Welsh coach of Wales.
Is that premature to say that after, you know, a couple of decent results this season?
No, it's definitely...
I really like Di.
No, it's
really
definitely like premature, but I'm not thinking the next cycle.
Right, okay.
Years down the line, because he's gonna have to be good at Cardiff for quite some time to be taken seriously as a Welsh coach. But if there is going to be a Welsh coach again of the Welsh team, who can you imagine it being? I'm going on the assumption that Cardiff can keep improving under Di Young from where they are now over a number of seasons. Then that would be the only man in the running to be Welsh coach who is actually Welsh.
Yeah.
We have
actually got three Welsh coaches in charge of the regions at the moment, which is the first time that's happened for quite a while, isn't it? I remember us doing a season preview, maybe only two seasons ago, where there were none. And obviously Dye's in charge at Cardiff, another Dye down the road.
And there's Welsh coaches.
And Dwayne Peel as well.
There's Welsh coaches dotted around as assistants or you know, forwards coaches or defence coaches dotted around other places, but none of them are serious contenders to be next Welsh coach. So Dye Young is probably the only serious contender around who is Welsh. He's not going to get in the next 12 months or even anytime soon. But if he continues, like obviously this, like I said, the Cardiff side are a little bit schizophrenic. You don't know which, a bit French actually, you don't know which side's going to turn up. Yeah. But if the general trend is upwards, as it has been, I would say from, well, they were in a hole when they at the end of last season. So it was fairly early days. But if the general trend is that they continue this season and have another good season after that, suddenly Dye Young becomes, he's the only candidate now, but he becomes a very strong candidate to be the next actual Welshman in charge of the Welsh team.
Yeah, and it does just make a massive difference in terms of the overall interest in the game, you know, to have a... I don't just mean Cardiff because it's the capital, but just to have the regions being competitive and winning games. You know, it's I think because we watch it week in, week out, I kind of become almost a bit blind to the fact that they lose every week. Yeah. Or not every week, but, you know, have been on such a bad run for such a number of years that even if you go back 10 years, it wasn't as bad. It wasn't anywhere near as bad as this. If you were to plot the decline of all four collectively, it was nowhere near as bad as it is now. So I hope that this is the start of a recovery for one and ideally all of the regions to be able to cling on to. So yeah, we'll see. But as we said, that brings us back to the lack of structure around the regional game. They still don't know what the playing budgets will be for next year. Amongst various other problems, or even if they'll all be there. So yeah, we'll watch with bated breath.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one thing we do know is that we'll be back. We'll be back with you next week. We'll be probably dealing with the fallout of whatever has happened in the rest of this week. It feels like it's like Welsh rugby has gone back into those days of what we kind of remember growing up, Murph. You know, running through coaches, firing them just before World Cups, things like that. So
yeah, not entirely clear who is making the terrible decisions at the top. Yeah. Just like a faceless organization.
Faceless Blazers, yeah.
Yeah, that just makes shit decisions on a regular basis. Before we wrap up, I just want to point out we're recording this in the afternoon. We don't normally, as you know, well, you know that, but maybe the listeners don't. And I've been drinking coffee instead of San Miguel Especial, which I normally have to hand when we're recording on a Sunday night. So there's been a lack of expletives on my part this week, and I just noticed that maybe coffee is the way forward. Sometimes I have an espresso to wake myself up before, and then a can of special while I'm recording, and as the podcast goes on, I get more and more foul-mouthed. But I've been very respectful today. I think I've only done about two or three.
Yeah, we've had a couple of bollocks, a couple of piss.
I don't think bollocks counts as a swear word. No. I mean, if you said bollocks in America, they wouldn't even know what that was. So therefore, you know, it's like feck. You know, it's a different vowel. It's not the same. So
and on that beautiful segue, thank you as always to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. What was it like to say, Murph? Caffeine, not nicotine.
Caffeine, not nicotine, kids.
So yeah, with that in mind, if you want to get some great quality coffee, you could do that over at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Scott, if you're listening to this, please send me the stuff that you owed me, and we'll get some sent to Murph as well.
Yes, please.
Keep him off the San Miguel's for a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
But I'm sure the listeners want to hear you.
I find I get just as dehydrated on either coffee or alcohol, to be honest. So it's just whether we want Sweary Murphy or.
I'm sure the listeners do, hopefully some incarnation.
Fuck them! I don't care what they think.
Well, some incarnation of him will be back to chat rugby with you very, very soon. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.